It's true. Amy Ryan has tackled the classics on Broadway, Streetcar Named Desire, Uncle Vanya. Amy Ryan is part of the cast of the critically acclaimed TV show The Wire. Amy Ryan is in three movies in theaters now, Gone Baby Gone, Dan in Real Life, and Before the Devil Knows You're Dead. And Amy Ryan is likely to say in the next year, it's just an honor to be nominated when award season rolls around. And Amy Ryan joins us here in the NPR studios. So nice of you to come by.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm such a pleasure to be here.
You were just regaling us with stories about the press junket for Gone Baby Gone. You had to sit in a room, and how many interviews did you have to go through in one shot?
Well, in one day, there were about 100 people that came through in one day. And, I was saying, I was so short for adjectives. After a while, I put myself to sleep with the sound of my own voice. So it's a skill. But I don't think I've ever met that many people in one day.
It's unbelievable. If you had to describe the way your career is going right now, Amy, how would you describe it?
I would describe it as a gift and also where I'd hope to be.
Yeah.
So the surprise is that it is not the shape of it, because that's what I had hoped, but it is a surprise that it's happened. I mean, I know that's a complete conflict there, but it's a dream. It's a dream.
It's interesting because you started on stage, or a lot of people know you in this area, in New York area, from your work on stage. And then there's your work in the electronic medium. What is it about stage work that you get that you don't quite get in the TV and the movie thing?
Well, on stage, I believe, I mean, maybe that's because it's my story, but that's where I believe I become a better actor, and it's because you are there without a net, and it is obviously a live medium, and what you get from the audience, you know, what you give and take, and it is you up there alone or with your fellow actors. So it's, and also working with text and developing characters and the arc of a story. Whereas film, which is what I learned from Ben Affleck over and over, was non-linear acting, doing scenes out of order in terms of the story, but sometimes the actual scene, filming the last portion of it, the last five lines before the first. And that took me a while to get my head around.
I think that's the weirdest thing. I've heard actresses say that before, that this whole idea, if you're all emotionally raw and getting involved and portraying this person and this character, we'll talk about it in a minute, and Gone Baby Gone is just going through a really horrible time. How do you keep it all straight in your head?
With a great director.
Really?
And a great script supervisor. Yeah, and then just makeup and hair, who will, you know, reapply your worn off mascara. Mm-hmm. But it's a Rubik's Cube. It's a puzzle. And, it is almost like, in a way, being a boxer, sitting on the side of, you know, getting your shoulders massaged, getting back in there for the second portion of it, or the third round, or the fourth round, whatever.
Is there a part about acting for the camera, though, where you can actually do smaller things? Like, you can have a reaction on your face that the camera picks up, that if you're on stage, you're trying to land it at the back of the auditorium. That seems to me to be less realistic.
Yeah. And also, sometimes, you know, the reactions you do might have been to something else, and the editor thought it was interesting to piece it into this moment, you know. I've seen that in certain films I've done, you know. It's like, oh, that wasn't meant
really
for that, but that looks good. Okay.
Let's talk about, we've been talking about this movie, Gone Baby Gone, which was directed by Ben Affleck. It's a tough story, but a really tough part of Boston. I don't want to give too much away, but a little girl goes missing, and the story's kind of ultimately about, everybody kind of questions in the film, what's the right thing to do?
Mm-hmm. It's about the consequences of your decisions and your non-decisions, and how do you live with that. And yeah, the event in the story is this, this young girl goes missing. I'm the, you know, delinquent mother whose child it is. But it's not just a whodunit.
No, and, not at all.
And really, every single character in the film, you watch how this event affects their lives, their relationships. And that's why I think the film is so interesting. It really, and then it leaves that question with the audience, you know, kind of what would you do? Mm-hmm. What is the best thing to do?
You mentioned your character's a delinquent mom. She's not a really a nice person, but not necessarily a bad person.
Yeah, I think when you play it as an actor, I mean, I can't sit there and go, she's bad, you know.
She's
as
not
an
necessarily
audience,
bad, though.
Yeah, but she's just someone who, my goodness, she needs help. That woman is uneducated and, you know, and addicted to drugs and alcohol, and is raising a child on her own. And that job alone, being a single parent, from what I can see on the outside, I'm not one, but that hands down, is, I think, the hardest job in the world. So if you add on that someone who doesn't have health insurance and education and really a strong family behind her, you know, that's a recipe for disaster.
She gets involved with selling some drugs. Let's listen to a clip.
Okay.
Just tell us how much you took. How much? How much?
130,000 dollars.
Yes, B.
How'd you do it?
We dropped 4 keys on these bikers. When we was walking back through the motel with all the money, these cops just swooped right in, went right for the bikers, and Amanda was with us, so we just pretended to be like a family, and we got in the car, took off.
You took Amanda with you?
Oh, what am I gonna do, leave her in the car, B?
Unbelievable accent. How long did it take you to nail that Boston, that certain part of Boston, too, accent?
Well, I think I grew up in Queens, and I think there's a similar attitude, not certainly a sound, but there's a similar attitude. So I knew about that defensive blue-collar kind of protection that can happen. And that's the first thought. And then secondly, it was just the confidence around me of Mr. Ben Affleck, and who said, you know, you'll get the accent, and if you don't, we'll fix it in post. So, like, there's this great freedom there, you know, and trust. There's what, you know, any actor hopes from, you know, with any director they work with. So I had Casey Affleck in one ear and Ben Affleck in the other ear, and always constantly, you know, saying it's Mava, not Mava. And then Ben also cast, the film is shot in Dorchester, in which the story takes place, and he cast all these non-actors, and, you know, people off the street went to a bar and said, everyone, please stay, we'll buy you drinks all day if you'll be in our movie. And so I spent a lot of lunches with
locals.
With locals.
Can I just ask, when you hear a clip like that, I'm sitting here across from you and I'm hearing you in my headphones as this whole other person. When you hear that, do you think, oh, that's me? Or is that just like some other person that exists?
Well, of course I know it's me. Well, but I know what you mean. There is, yeah, it sounds like, I always get a kick of thinking of, you know, characters I play, like Halima McCready in Gone Baby Gone, and I try to picture her in a room with Marie Dewey from Capote. And that, like, that really tickles me. It's like, those women would never cross paths. So I get a kick out of that.
But do they have their own lives, these characters that you play that exist outside of you?
Well, I'm not really an actor that gets hypnotic and loses themselves in the process. And, you know, I don't insist on being called Helene in the middle of filming. I mean, I can be outside of it kind of after the takes. But I guess it's an alter ego of some sorts, and, you know, not that I'm anything like Halima McCready, but I'm aware of them, I guess, is what I mean to say.
There's a story, and I know you've told it in all your junkets, but it's such a good story that I'm going to ask you again.
Sure.
That you were mistaken for a local.
Oh,
you had,
yes,
a hard time getting on the set one day.
Ben said to me before we started, he said, Amy, he said, my hope, he said, you know, look, I hope you get a lot of recognition for this, but the truth is, I hope no one knows who the hell you are and that you are mistaken for a Boston local, and that people ask me, where did I find you off the streets? And the first day I went away in hair and makeup and all that, and I came back through set through the crowd of about 80 neighbors who were out to watch Ben Affleck shoot this movie, and I hadn't done the Boston accent yet. And as I walked through the barricades, this production assistant security guard stopped me. And I said, oh, here's the chance. And I said, oh no, I'm in the movie. I'm working with Ben Affleck. I can't really do the accent anymore. But he's like, oh, right, you're working with Ben Affleck? You know, I had this terrible greasy hair and makeup smudged on my face. I mean, it looked like a truck just hit me. And I said, yeah, no, I got a part in the movie. And he said, oh, no, man, please stand back. Please stand back. And so I was late, like, the first day I was.
And you had him fired.
He was mortified. I think he thought he was going to be fired, but I thanked him profusely. It's like, you have no idea the shot of confidence you just gave me. And I went up to Ben. I said, I just got banned from your set. And
nice.
The smile on his face, he's like, high five. He's like, let's go. So it was a really happy accident.
You've had a unique experience as an actress by working with a newish director, Ben Affleck, taking his first turn out, and then Sidney Lumet.
I know,
just
goodness.
One of the most amazing directors Before the Devil Knows You Are Dead. And the thing that they have in common is both these films are really gritty.
Yes.
But in terms of someone who's so new to the enterprise, and someone like Lumet, who is a master.
Master.
Do they have anything in common?
Do you know what? Yes, they do. And I think it's, well, first of all, their passion and their energy for telling these stories. I mean, the energy of Sidney, who is 83 years old, puts anyone to shame on that set who's, you know, a quarter of his age. And here's Ben, you know, taking this bold chance, you know, with the possibility of great failure, you know, can he direct a movie? And luckily he can. But going forth with just great conviction and passion and big heart. But I think they do, what they have in common is they're both great teachers as they're learning along the way. You know, Ben would say to me, I have no idea if this is going to work, but let's try this. And Ben also, as I said earlier, he taught me so much about nonlinear acting, you know, and was tough with me in a very great way, a great parental way, saying, you know, you come from the theater. That's great. Leave it alone. You don't need those skills here, you know. Don't be the good girl. Don't do other people's job. You were working with the greatest film crew around. And sometimes on stage you do other people's jobs because you are all dancing as fast as you can and something breaks and you pick up the slack or someone drops a line and you pick up the slack. So, but they're both great teachers. And I've had the great fortune of working with Sidney Lumet years ago on his television show 100 Center Street, and which I played actually three roles in the 2 years on the show. And he's just that, the idea of you can do anything, he just kept saying, and don't be afraid. And so they both really love actors. And there are some directors you meet that you get the sense that if only they could make a movie without an actor.
Yeah. That you're just your flesh, your pieces, parts.
Stand there and you know, don't make any noise. But
well, let's listen to a little bit from Before the Devil Knows You're Dead. You are demanding money, or you need money. You're owed money.
Ethan Hawke is a deadbeat dad.
There you go.
And he has, he's behind 4 months on child support payment.
Let's take a listen.
I'll see you next weekend. All right, be good. Here's the ball.
You didn't feed her junk, did you?
No, of course not.
Well, I don't want her to develop bad eating habits. She looks puffy.
She doesn't look puffy, all right? You look puffy.
She wore sunblock?
It was cloudy, Martha.
There are rays, Hank. Hey, you got my money?
Oh, Christ. Martha, do you have any idea what that school is costing me?
You're the one who wanted to send her there.
Yeah, because it's a damn good school, and she wanted to go there.
You owe me 3 months.
I don't owe you. I owe Danielle.
Don't get semantic.
Bye.
April, May, and June.
So amazing, as we sit here and talk to you and you look at your resume, you've done so much work and you're getting so much sort of mainstream attention right now, but you've been working for a while and doing really, really great work. If you could sit down, maybe you've already done this, talk to another working actress, somebody who's been out there, someone like an Edie Falco who worked yes. and then with The Sopranos, or Frances McDormand, what would you want to know from them? What question would you have for them?
Well, I know Edie. We live in the same neighborhood, or we did. And I remember bumping into her on the street one day. I said, "How's it going?" She said, "I'm kind of upset because she was doing Oz at the time, Tom Fontana's Oz." And she said, "I really have to make a choice. I can't do both shows anymore. I did this pilot called Sopranos, which is great too, but I'm going to have to give up Oz." And I was like, "Oh man, wow, that's terrible. Because Oz is such a great show, and who knew what this,
right?
You know." But you know, I see women like Edie, and it's just something about also staying in New York keeps you grounded and honest as an actor. And all the other accolades, you know, they will come and go. And as long as you just keep searching for truth of character and wanting to tell stories for a real reason, and that's what I see. From friends and mentors who've gone before me, and just that strength of character and in it really for the story and for the art of it, and also from now and again to pay your rent. But
before we let you go, I know Luke's a huge fan of The Wire.
I have to say, I think probably my favorite character I've seen you play has got to be Beattie Russell, this kind of really unassuming doc security, you know, person in Baltimore. Do Wire fans come up to you and just freak out? Because if you like The Wire, you like The Wire.
Yeah, yes. The Wire is the only thing I'm ever recognized from. And what I really love about that, they never say, tell me about you, and can I have your autograph? It's none of that. Right away, they're like, oh, man, I love that show. I'm like, right? Isn't it good? So they start right away talking about story and the writing, and it's never about me. They don't want to know anything about me, and I love that because I was a huge fan of the show the first year, and then just so happened I got the job the second year. So I, too, showed up going, oh, my goodness, The Wire. This is fantastic.
Well, I think that's a real testament to you that, you know, the character is what comes through and you know, all the good stuff.
Amy Ryan, thank you so much for joining us here at NPR.
My pleasure.
The Bryant
Thanks
Park
for having
Project.
Me.
Go see Amy Ryan in one of her many movies.
Go to any movie in America.
Your Cineplex, three out of six. You're likely to see Amy.
Any television show or any play, Amy Ryan will be there.